So welcome, welcome everyone to our panel on online publishers and advertising networks. My name is, can you hear me all? Is this, yeah? My name is Jonathan Weber, and I'm the founder and publisher of NewWest.net. We're a local and regional online publication based in Missoula, Montana. And we are a small publisher, and I have a lot of personal interest in the topics we'll be discussing today. We have a great panel here. Larry Allen of Takoda to my immediate right, Patrick McCarthy from Wright Media, Justin Ward from FeedBurner, and Cody Sims from Yahoo. And this panel is going to be pretty conversational. We'll just have a couple of brief presentations, but really mostly discussion, and we look forward to hearing all of your input on the things we're talking about as well. I think for certainly it's been my experience, and I think for any publisher, and especially for small publishers these days, advertising networks are kind of a big and potentially important but confusing issue. And I think of it as a kind of an opportunity for me as a publisher. And yet there's a lot of things out there that are sort of subtly different, that are have slightly different models, that are not necessarily easy to understand. And in terms of how to optimize these things for yourself as a publisher and really make the most money that you can from advertising networks is not necessarily a simple matter. So that is the kind of thing that we're going to try to sort out a little bit today. So the format, in light of that fact that there are so many different models and different kinds of companies and changing models, and I thought we'd start out with each of the panelists just giving a very quick sort of 3 to 5 minute overview of what their ad network does and who they serve and what their model is, and then we'll take the discussion from there. And just to set a little broad context for where we are in online advertising in general, Cody has a few slides which show the some trends from a recent Morgan Stanley study in overall trends in online advertising and kind of where the dollars are going. So I thought we'd start out with that, and then with Cody just giving his kind of 2 minutes on Yahoo and where Yahoo is as a ad network provider, and we'll go from there. So, Cody?
Great. Thank you very much, Jonathan, and thanks to everybody for coming. I was getting ready for the panel this morning and stumbled upon this report from Morgan Stanley. It's from last fall, October 06, I think, and anyone in the room who's interested in what's happening in online advertising or advertising in general, search for it because it's absolutely fantastic. It was like 40 pages long and chock full of data and also analysis, written analysis. So it was really interesting. But just kind of stumbled upon a few charts that I clipped into here just because I thought it would really set the stage for the discussion. This chart shows from 99 on the left to 2006 on the right, the mix of advertising across many media. So just kind of to show where we are in the game still, internet is the teal green third one from the top. So it every time I see numbers like this, it blows my mind, because here we are, you know, the internet is, you know, this massive thing, right? But in terms of, this is US numbers, in terms of the amount of spend that advertisers are putting into it, still, we're still just at the beginning. And it just shows how much potential there is for all of us who work in online publishing and, you know, in online advertising to really kind of move to the next level. So again, 99 to 05. The big one at the bottom, which still blows my mind, is direct mail. So, all right. And then this is internet advertising historical from Q103 in the left to Q206 on the right, broken up by type. And then the bar or the line graph is total internet advertising growth year over year, so percentage growth year over year. So the big one that you see that just kind of came, you know, a little bit out of nowhere there, red is search, green is rich media. Blue is display and sponsorship, and they kind of differentiate rich media from display and sponsorship by being things that are either video or kind of flash based or, you know, highly interactive, basically is their definition. The purple is classified, and the yellow is email and other. So again, just kind of showing the breakdowns over the type of media and where things are changing right now. This one was a forecast. So from 01 on the left to 2010 on the right, also U.S. internet spend and breakdown. So again, amazingly, 01 search, the little red thing, you know, up to 2010 being, they're saying 50% of the marketplace. Display and sponsorship is purple, rich media is blue, classified is green, and email is yellow. One thing that they also did some forecasts in terms of which of these are growing as a percentage of itself, and basically they're projecting that search is going to have grow, basically this is from last year, was going to be 34% growth in 05, and all the way in 2010 was still going to be growing at an 18% clip. So it's actually its percentage is the over as a percentage of the overall market is shrinking in terms of its growth, which I thought was interesting. Rich media was one that they're projecting to grow from 4% to 22% in terms of its overall size within itself from 2005 to 2010. But as a percentage of the market, search and rich media are they're expecting to be a more dominant percentage of the overall market in 2010 versus today. And then finally, just another metric to kind of something to talk about or something to consider that was in this report was minutes spent online versus page views. So these are growth rates. So year-over-year growth rates. So you've got page views, on, it is the green line, and minutes spent online is the red line. So the in March 06, there was this sort of, you know, magic inflection point happening where people's the growth rate of the time people spend online surpassed the growth rate of the number of page views people used online. Yes?
What was the name and source of the reporting?
This is from Morgan Stanley. It was from October 06. So yeah, check it out if you can. Let's see, I can find the file name. It was MS Internet Ad Report 101306.pdf. So if you search for that, again, MS Internet Ad Report 101306.pdf. So those are sort of some of the overall trends I thought were just interesting to set the context for the discussion today. You know, we're here in a panel about publishing, and I'm starting out with a bunch of advertising numbers, but, you know, things are, you know, they're definitely one and the other hand in hand. So so with that, specifically, I'll do a 2 or 3 minute overview on why Yahoo's here. Yahoo obviously plays in kind of all forms of publishing, and it's recently started distributing advertising to display advertising and rich media advertising to really large publishers, eBay. We have a partnership with, you know, a couple hundred newspapers across the country, that sort of thing. But in terms of the, you know, kind of what we call the self-service publisher market, people who can sign up, get some ad code, put it on their page, and earn money from Yahoo. Currently, our product that we have available for that for publishers like that is contextual advertising. So rather than talk about Yahoo's contextual advertising solution, I want to kind of just talk about contextual advertising in general, just to set the, you know, make sure we're all on the same page in terms of what that type of advertising is from a publisher standpoint. Before I do that, we did some interesting market research and through polls and surveys with publishers and basically asked a lot of publishers what motivates them to publish. And we had a bunch of different drivers. Some people like the lifestyle. Some people like to, you know, share their interests and communicate with people. Some people are interested in the technology. You know, they really love getting into the open source and figuring out the WordPress templates and whatnot. And some people, you know, kind of find it a game to, like, maximize their ROI and, you know, figure out what their effective CPM was for the day and how they can better that. And, you know, there's a bunch of benefits they got personally from it. You know, they can kind of go publish their site while they're sitting at a baseball game. You know, they can help share their information with other people. They can, you know, it's a hobby for them. And it's something they like to spend time on. Or, you know, maybe they're actually learning themselves, like, what's going on and how this stuff works. Or you know, they're just like the feeling of success. They've built a good site. But what it really breaks down to when people got down to what they're really getting out of it was kind of two things. So even people who are just interested in publishing for the social reasons of it, they love traffic. Like, you know, that's great. Hey, I got two more people visiting my site today. Awesome. You know, or if they're really turning it into a business, they, you know, they're like to see the revenue coming in. But the two kind of go hand in hand. You get more revenue when you have more traffic. And, you know, if you start getting traffic, you're going to, there's a potential for you to start earning a revenue. And where this relates specifically to contextual advertising is that contextual advertising works like a search engine. There's a robot that crawls your page, determines what your page is about, and basically helps you to serve ads on your site that are relevant to the content of your page. What's interesting here is if you optimize your site for contextual advertising, you're basically also optimizing it for search engines. And it's kind of a, you know, a lot of people maybe are familiar with search engine optimization, but they don't think about contextual advertising optimization. If you're doing one, you're kind of doing the other. It's just sort of a premise that I sort of wanted to start with today about how it works. So, you know, the very, very first thing you want to do is, let the robots in. So let people crawl your page. Don't block them. Don't do these things. If you want to learn more about robot rules, you can go to robotstxt.org. But this is basically telling your page, crawl me to all the spiders, whether they're contextual advertising engine spiders or search engine spiders. It's basically the same thing. Just how contextual advertising works, a quick anatomy of a web page. Again, we're crawling the page to determine what the page is about and serving ads relevant to that. So, the anatomy of the page, we can't read images. This is basic SEO stuff, but if you're not familiar with it, I'll walk through a little bit of it here, but do a search, on anything related to search engine optimization, you're going to find a world of best practices. We can't crawl search forms and pull down menus and flyouts and anything like that. Giant images in the middle of the page, we can't do anything with, we can't eat them. There's nothing, nothing we can do there. The URL starts to get interesting. We can't fully digest it, but we can determine a lot out of what's happening with the URL, especially if you format your URLs really well. Navigation, same thing. It kind of points toward what the next page is in the list. Tags, that's where it starts to get really interesting. So what are your title tags, your description tags, all that stuff. That helps from a contextual advertising standpoint. Headers, hugely important. And then the text is the meat of the page. So that's exactly, what we're looking to read. What is the text of the page about? We'll serve, a nice, healthy dessert on the site. Another thing to talk about today, because various people here have other solutions that I think are interesting, is homepage or indexes. If your index page is really dynamic, it can be kind of tricky. And I think other people have some solutions that, are really good for home pages. One thing I've heard some people, when they do contextual advertising, they have a lot of success with is they actually only serve contextual ads on a page when the user came from a search result. So a user searched for a topic, came to the page. If they obviously have an intent, and then that's when you serve a contextual ad, as opposed to a brand ad or something like that. And, there's some interesting, ways you could optimize around some of that. And I think some of the people, some of the other folks here might have some things to say about that too. I have my Jayhawks up there because we're playing today. So I gotta give them the love.
Cody, if I could ask you, does Yahoo plan to expand its offering to all publishers beyond just the contextual ad offering?
Definitely something we're looking at heavily. I mean, I think the move to work with eBay, large publishers, like the different newspapers across the country and whatnot, I think it's an inevitable trend that we're looking toward. But right now, again, YPN at publisher.yahoo.com is a contextual marketplace. Right. And it's been sort of our toe-in-the-water approach to working with smaller publishers.
Right.
Real quick, URLs. You want to format your URLs in a permalink structure, not in a query string structure. You want to not do things like click here. You want to make your links as descriptive as possible because it shows like what the underlying page is about. And then finally, I think everyone on this panel could agree with this when it comes to publishing. Ask yourself when you're doing something, is this good for the user or is this good for the advertiser? Because there's a lot of things you can do to make money, but do things that are bad for those two constituencies. And without those two constituencies, ultimately the ad network's going to blow up and you're not going to have any money from it, and or you're not going to have any more users. So I think everyone would probably agree with those two basic premises there. So the reminder, if you serve up hearty chunks of content and text, then that's what we're looking for. And in return, relevant advertising on your site. So that's a basic overview of contextual advertising. And happy to answer questions afterwards and continue the discussion through here.
Great. Thanks, Cody. Justin, you work with FeedBurner, and I know are a blogger yourself. And FeedBurner, I think people think of as an RSS service and an RSS ad network, but FeedBurner also is in the site ad serving business. And so, Justin, if you could just give us 2 minutes on that.
Hi. So my name's Justin Ward, and I don't have a name tag. I guess that went missing all of a sudden, but... my name is Justin Ward, and I work in the ad operations group at FeedBurner. So I work directly on the FeedBurner ad network, above and beyond, you know, the traditional set of free publisher tools that you might be used to if you're a FeedBurner publisher already. So the big thing that we started with was, of course, allowing you to track metrics and stats on your RSS feed. And as Jonathan mentioned, we've definitely been expanding lately to basically allow FeedBurner to give you a full view of your audience as, you know, who's reading my feed, who's reading my site. And we provide a, you know, plethora of free tools that allow you to do that. And the FeedBurner ad network we view as a small extension of that then. If you're a publisher willing and able with an audience to actually monetize it and make some money, what we do is we serve mostly display-based advertising in your feed and some text-based also. But then we also expand and say, well, if you're a publisher that also wants to serve site advertising, we can begin to serve more dynamic site content or site advertising for you, you know, as a publisher. So FeedBurner Ad Network came about, you know, really early last year. Early 06 was the real ramp-up where I think we started adding many more publishers. Again, that had an audience, and they knew that because we provided the tools that showed them that. And what we started to do was, of course, insert the advertising for them and just basically provide them metrics across the board on not only what their audience is doing, you know, how it's engaging with their feed, with their site, but also how is your audience engaging with the advertising that you serve on the content. Well, you know, as Cody mentioned, there's many things that then we can begin to do optimization-wise, because certain publishers are maybe meant to be feed publishers more often than site publishers, just depending on the content, and et cetera, and vice versa. So that's what FeedBurner is basically doing with the ad network right now. So I've gotten to work on that for about the last year or so, which is good. And I, as Jonathan mentioned, I'm actually a publisher myself. I'm the editor of livemusicblog.com. So a couple years ago, I started my own site and began just probably very much like many of you have of just, okay, start with my passion, start small. Okay, I know I need to publish every day. Now what? I want to make some money. I have to pay for hosting. And I spend a lot of time doing this. Sure, it's my passion, but who doesn't want to make a little money back, right? So I started very logically then with many contextual, you know, solutions. You know, one of them was Yahoo, one of them was Google AdSense, which maybe a lot of you are familiar with then. And as my audience began to grow, I was able to then pursue other options, which would be, oh, I'm interested in now serving RSS advertising. And that's actually how I came to FeedBurner. I joined the network first and found that they were hiring. So I think it sort of gives you maybe...
That's one way to monetize your blog, right?
Right. You know, so that's a good way to step into, you know, what does being a publisher really mean these days? Sure, contextual advertising, you know, my audience tends to be very search-based in a lot of ways. I cover, you know, music festivals and concerts. And, you know, basically contextual advertising worked. And, it worked, but it didn't work enough. You know, and I realized that very early on that it had to remain more of a hobby for me and more of something on the sideline. And there then, of course, I brought my interest then to FeedBurner as something I want to pursue professionally more, you know, something more full time. I think that's really a good overview of FeedBurner and the ad network and basically what I do. Definitely interested in answering more questions you have.
And I think, well, and before we, I'd like to kind of get through, we'll have plenty of time for questions, but wanted to kind of get through a few things first. And I would just point out that problem of sort of contextual ads work, but they don't work enough. And I think that's that's something that's on the mind of a lot of publishers, and hopefully there are some solutions here to that.
Definitely another point to make clear then is one of the things that eBurner is unique at is it's not contextual advertising. It's not search-based ads, which you're receiving. It's actually all done on CPM-based, which is basically, you know, if someone views an item in your feed, well, that's sort of the equivalent of a page view online. And, you know, and as we mentioned, very much the on-site ad model has always been based on page views. And, you know, something I think we're all going to get into is just what we're seeing at FeedBurner is that's very much shifting to more of an engagement metric. Advertisers want to know how people are viewing feeds, how they're viewing ads on sites in conjunction with those feeds. And it's not about clicking it. It's about just viewing maybe the video or just going to the site and just hanging out on the site for a long time. You know, it's not necessarily based on an ROI. Like, what did I sell today? Did I sell a computer because someone clicked on my ad? So I definitely think that we'll have more to talk about on that, which is interesting, I think, to most publishers now. There's definitely a shift.
Patrick, tell us a little about Right Media and Ad Exchange, which I think is an amorphous concept for
a lot of us. Yeah, my name is Patrick McCarthy. I work for Right Media. Right Media is an advertising exchange, which many of you are familiar with the concept of an ad network. An exchange is a little bit different in that we provide a common platform for advertisers, ad networks, publishers, and just advertising technology providers to all basically trade ad impressions, kind of like a stock exchange, all on one platform. So we have all these parties who are connected together through one web application where they can essentially buy and trade ad impressions through a real-time auction. So the problem that this solves for publishers is that, you know, there's, like everyone sitting up here, we all have great advertising solutions, and there's many choices for publishers out there to optimize or to monetize their inventory. But when a user views your web page, which one of those ad solutions is going to pay you the most money for that user? Pay you the most money for that particular page impression? Because each user is different. They're in different geographies. They react to ads differently. So we provide technology on our platform that helps optimize, you know, which ad provider is going to pay the most for that impression. And help send it that way. So besides the exchange providing many, many buyers and sellers, we also provide yield management technology to help optimize where you should be sending your ad inventory. So I head up a product at Right Media called RMX Direct, which as a blogger or publisher, you basically sign up for and you can choose to work with 10 different networks on that are part of our exchange who will bid in real time for your inventory. But if you're working with Dakota or FeedBurner or the Yahoo Publisher Network or someone else, you can also input what those people are paying you and put their ad code in our tool. And then when you send us an ad impression, we're going to see if any of the networks on our exchange are willing to pay more for that impression than, say, YPN is going to pay. If we are, we'll send the ad to the network on our exchange. If not, we'll send it to YPN, and you'll still, you know, make as much money as you would have sending it to YPN otherwise. I'm also a publisher myself. I have a blog called ConversionRater.com where I talk about publishing and advertising and a lot of these companies. And then also I ran a site called Wakeboarder.com for about 9 years, which is really where I got my start in sort of mass scale web publishing and selling my own advertising and working with ad networks and all that kind of stuff.
What kind of CPMs are people generally getting from your product?
Well, it's different because if you're a publisher who comes in, you know, on average you're earning a dollar working with Dakota, you know, we're only going to, maybe we'll only take 5-10% of that inventory, but we'll pay more than a dollar for that, and you'll still, you know, be making the same amount you were with Dakota before. Or, you know, maybe you're, you know, working with ValueClick today and only making 25 cents, you know, we may change that to 75 cents for 75% of your inventory. So it's really dependent on what your inventory is like, and other factors like that.
And can and what would be the hard? Because I think a frustration of a lot of publishers is, yeah, you know, value click, you know, 25-cent CPM. It's like not it's not worth the trouble. You know, you kind of junk up your site with ads that you don't necessarily want. And so I think what a lot of people are looking for is, well, okay, well, when I can get, you know, $2-3 I mean, you know, you get $2-3 off of Google, so that's sort of the baseline.
Right.
That's kind of how I look at it. And then, so we want to be looking up from there.
Right.
So, is there some sites that are able to do better than that?
Yeah, there's some sites that are. There's really a difference too between the type of sites that work really well with contextual and sites that don't work as well with contextual. A social network like MySpace doesn't do as well with contextual advertising because there's not a whole, you go view someone's profile and it's like, what is that profile really about?
Mm-hmm.
What sort of meat, as Cody was talking about, the meat of that page is like a bunch of pictures of friends and then this wide range of interests about movies and books. And so it's hard to really, for a computer to get what's the best thing for that page. So if your site is like MySpace, then you're going to do better with display advertising that doesn't necessarily have context. But if your site is about the Rocky Mountain region and you have very specific content, you're probably going to get a better CPM with a contextual network in that case.
Right.
Okay. What's nice about our tools is that if you're getting that $2 or $3, we're not going to make you make less.
Right.
So there's really no risk there. But as a whole, the Right Media Exchange really does specialize at this point in helping that huge growth of page views that are out there. Because as user-generated content is just creating page views and page ad impressions all over the place that is really growing at a pace faster than ad dollars and advertisers are coming into, you know, this stuff. And as we were talking about before the session, a lot of advertisers are still uncomfortable with user-generated content. And so we help monetize that huge growth of inventory by putting that into an exchange and letting, you know, a lot of direct response advertisers and other types of advertisers who aren't as picky about user-generated content to monetize and bid for that inventory and drive up the prices.
Right. Okay. And maybe Larry, I think that's a good transition to Coda. We were talking earlier about that issue of what advertisers will like or not, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about how Takoda works and what your principle is there.
So I'm Larry Allen. I run marketing business development for Takoda. We are a behaviorally targeted ad network, and what we do is observe interests of audiences across all of the websites that we represent and work with. We work with large media companies like Dow Jones, New York Times, USA Today, Orbitz, Kelley Blue Book, basically to observe behaviors on those websites that are, you know, specific to you know, different verticals of interest that large brand advertisers would be interested in reaching. And then what we do is acquire inventory from websites that are typically general interest sites or sites that have a difficult time contextually placing advertising at high rates. So to exactly the point that Patrick was making, we look at news sites or blog sites or other sites that are have, you know, a non-endemic kind of contextual environment where we can help those publishers raise CPMs. One of the other interesting things that are kind of a side benefit for publishers that work with Takoda is we provide free audience reports that basically tell you who your audience is and where they go on the internet. We're tracking over 4,500 websites and the audiences that pass through them, about 150 million profiles a month. And what that does for us is enable us to tell each publisher that we work with where their audiences are going and what their audiences are interested in. So if, you know, every day you're writing about, you know, depletion of the rainforest or something, and, you know, you don't know what else your audience is interested in, we basically are showing you a report that says, you know, your audiences are also interested in hybrid cars, and they're also interested in, you know, gourmet foods, which may give you some indication of kind of the content that you could potentially build out to become more contextually relevant and also drive more value from your audience specifically.
Where are you getting that data?
So we have contracts with each of the publishers we work with, and we basically are scanning those pages and the contextual relevance. So, for example, Dow Jones is a great provider of business information and financial information about the audiences, and we look at the recency and frequency of the visitors to those pages over time, which then helps us build a profile that says, you're interested in mutual funds and he's interested in luxury SUVs over the last 7 or 14 days. And then we use that to then deliver targeted advertising on a non-contextually oriented page. Yeah? We certainly do. Yeah. So those the larger media companies that we work with, we have a contractual relationship where we're paying them for that audience information whenever we're making a targeted ad delivery.
Are they telling you just about their users' behavior on their site?
That's correct.
Or are they cooking their users and tracking their
general surfing? No, we're actually cooking their users on their website, and then we're observing those users as they traverse our network of sites, and we then build that profile. So I understand a person who's gone to Dow Jones' website and also has gone to Orbitz, and I see them as a business traveler if they're going there frequently over time. So then I create a very unique profile on that set of people. For example, we have a segment of our audience that are auto intenders. We actually have a larger auto intender audience than eBay Motors, which is the largest auto site on the internet. So that enables us to go to companies like GM or Ford and say, if you want to reach people who are interested in buying a new car or truck or luxury sedan in the last 30 days, we can put an ad for you in front of them. And we're really about starting at the upper end of the advertising funnel, the cycle that a buyer goes through, as opposed to the direct response advertisers who are right at the end of that transaction cycle, which really just translates into larger CPMs for a publisher. One of the things that kind of we alluded to was, how much inventory can you fill? We're kind of like finding the needle in the haystack. So if you have a volume of inventory, we're going to fill some percentage of that inventory, those ad impressions, and then there's going to be a leftover amount that we can't deliver against because we don't have a targeted profile. And in that case, then that inventory is then transferred back to the publisher or to another ad network or to the exchange for further monetization. So we like to look at ourselves as a way for people to generate the highest CPMs on those ad impressions being generated by people that are of the most value to them. So I guess the way to think about it is we're about people and not pages, whereas most of the other networks are about the pages and the contextual relevance of that content. So we're a nice complement, I think, to a lot of the other ad networks that are out there to help you monetize those pages that today don't generate a lot of revenue for you but could generate a lot of traffic.
I'd like to ask each of the panelists this. I think one of the tricks in the ad network game from a publisher point of view is that different networks are better for different kinds of sites. Mm-hmm. And so there are big sites, small sites, tightly targeted sites, more general sites, user-generated, straight professional publisher sites. Is that a question each of you can answer as to what, and I know there may be a general answer in some, but what type of site is the one that's going to benefit most from your network?
I guess I'll go first since I was last up. So we basically break the type of publishers that we work with into two categories, those that provide audience and those that provide inventory. For us, any publisher can provide inventory, and it really comes down to how large of an overlap do we have with the audience that you represent. But what we're finding is because we have 150 million profiles a month, we pretty much are seeing users on every website at this point, and a large percentage of them. So it just really comes down to how much undersold inventory do you have to make available to us, and then we look at is there enough volume there to kind of engage in that relationship.
And how much volume do you need?
We usually are looking at somewhere between 200,000 and 500,000 impressions a day that can be made available to us across three different ad sizes. Mm-hmm. So that
200,000 to 500,000 a day is already good sized sites.
Yeah, it's pretty big. Yeah. But one of the things that we're looking at is how do we kind of continue to present tools and functionality to those publishers to enable them to seamlessly integrate with us. We've taken a very kind of client services approach, but we're finding now that we have a lot. There are a lot of sites actually that are blog sites that generate tremendous amounts of traffic. And so they're certainly worth it for us to handhold those. But, the next kind of tier of properties, we're looking at how do we automate that process for signing up to our network, because we certainly see the demand from advertisers to drive more inventory against what we're doing, and we certainly see, you know, that tier of publishers is a place that we need to go. Mm-hmm.
So we don't really have a minimum for working with our RMX Direct product. Really, any size blog or publisher can work with us. I would say that the ones that benefit the most are sites that are having a hard time monetizing their inventory. So if Takoda's not coming up with a lot of user profiles for your users, or if contextual advertising isn't really working particularly well for your site, then our products tend to do a pretty good job monetizing that kind of inventory.
Mm-hmm. At FeedBurner, I think it's far and away we've seen that the successful publishers are those that just truly have a highly engaged audience. Due to the nature of an RSS subscriber, the word is right there. You know, you're a subscriber. You're someone that's actively interested in receiving that content every day. So what we see if someone is a publisher that maybe drives a lot of traffic from search, which actually that's me a lot of times, a lot of my site traffic is from search. And what you see with the CPM-based advertising is that people reading your feed aren't searching for anything. They're reading that feed every day. And we see that just publishers that are successful are the ones that have an audience that maybe is subscribed to the feed, but also comments on the site, where we can serve RSS in the feed and on the site. We're allowing brand advertisers to more actively reach that engaged audience, And for me,
So that would be highly targeted interest sites are kind of your sweet spot, would you say that?
Well, I think there's, I would say even highly targeted sometimes tends to do better search, where I think maybe a highly subscribed, general audience, someone that's maybe interested in a wide range of content that's being published on that site, I'd say those publishers would do a little better serving, the FeedBurner ads, just given that they're CPM-based and everything, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think to that point, for a contextual solution like Yahoo Publisher Network, the sites that do best with us are ones that have, on a URL by URL basis, fairly static content at the URL level that is topically oriented. So if you have a URL that has 10, that's why I said index pages, home pages can be kind of tricky. If you have a page that has 15 different topics going on it, we're going to have trouble figuring out what that page is really about. If you have a page that has one or two core pieces of content that are focused on a certain topic, that does really well for contextual advertising. Yahoo overall, I think, can answer some of the questions about behavioral and demographic and stuff. And I think there's some interesting things to look at there. Yahoo currently on the display advertising is kind of first buy in the from brand advertisers. If they're wanting to buy, kind of one of the first places they go is the Yahoo network. And that's why we're starting to test distributing that stuff out to eBays and the newspaper chains of the world. But as we were talking before, I think there's some real concerns there, and it's why we're doing a toe-in-the-water approach, and we haven't taken that inventory and made it available to kind of anyone yet. Is we were talking about user-generated content and some of the fears there of advertisers. And I think Larry made a great point. He said advertisers consider anything as being user-generated if it has a comment. So it doesn't have to be a social network page. It doesn't have to be a blog post. It could literally be an article that allows comments. And I thought that was fascinating. I hadn't heard that approach, but it shows, I think, why, from the display and behavioral targeting and all the stuff that Yahoo's able to do as well. And I think we've, and Takoda to some extent too, has been a little bit reserved in terms of opening up that inventory, because advertisers, frankly, aren't ready for that yet.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and so there's an education process there, because I think, as we go forward, there's a lot more merging. I mean, New West, as an example, is kind of a hybrid professional or pro-am, you know, I think of it as, and I think that's increasingly going to be the mode, you know, even for large media organizations.
So. Well, one of the things that we're doing to help educate the advertisers, we've taken a very conservative stance, but also an aggressive one, where we work with a third party to actually scan and audit all of the inventory providers in the network. And so 3 days a week, we get a report of, you know, thousands and thousands of URLs, and they're ranked based on mature content, pornography, all of these different things that are very sensitive to a brand advertiser, and then we're basically scanning them and reviewing them with the staff that we have that basically is then going back and saying, look, these were all false positives. It's not really a bad thing, because there are a lot of headlines or things that are in the text which are sexually oriented but aren't necessarily inappropriate. And so, you know, we have to just continue to reassure our advertisers that we're taking every precaution necessary, that the publishers that are in the network are, you know, kind of doing the right thing, right? You know, it's the kind of the mommy alert, if you will. You know, is this something my mom would approve of? And if it is, then the brand advertiser's probably going to be happy. There are some overly sensitive brands out there, which, you know, you just can't do anything about. So we're also kind of tiering our network so that, you know, we've got this strata of publishers that are kind of super, super conservative, clean, well-lit. And what's interesting is even a lot of we work with a number of newspaper companies as well, and even those tend to fall outside of that category because of, you know, airline crashes or whatever. You know, there's certain types of topics that they cover, political issues. We had an advertiser that said, I do not want to be associated with any political content. I'm like, well, okay, so you basically just took out 90% of the inventory that we represent. So, you know, this is, you know, there are these challenges, but I think we're doing everything we can to kind of overcome them.
Brings up a question kind of for you, Larry, or any other publishers out there. But if you're a publisher and you're looking to make money from advertising, and there's this problem of do you want to make your site the type of site that really is perfect for that brand type of advertising and stay away from user-generated content? Or do you want to promote, you know, blogs and forums and all those things which really rise the amount of user engagement and page views and ad impressions you create, but potentially could be blocking advertisers from wanting to work with your site because of making it of a more dangerous nature?
Yeah, well, you know, as an editor, you know, I've always believed that you can't really edit your publication for the advertisers. And that, you know, that's true in print advertising. And, you know, there's a lot of publications out there that are advertising public, you know, that aren't sort of real publications in my mind. You know, I look around in Missoula, for example, there's a couple of local lifestyle magazines that are really kind of catalogs of local restaurants and local retailers, and they don't really try to do real editorial. And so you can kind of do that. It's an advertising product. But if you're creating a real publication, you can't edit that publication based on what you think the advertisers will want, because you'll end up with the worst of both worlds, which is something that readers don't like and advertisers, you know, are kind of indifferent to. So, you know, you can do little things. I mean, we do pay attention to headlines and making headlines search friendly. And, you know, there's things like that. And you can, you know, a search friendly headline may not be the optimal headline from an editorial point of view, but, you know, we're willing to make some sacrifices around the edges there. But in terms of the core content of what we're about, I think it's a real error to try to second guess what you think that advertisers might be comfortable with.
I think in terms of, you know, sort of the fear of user-generated content, you know, there's huge changes going on that are really interesting to watch. So, you know, again, Larry's comments about fear of putting ads in on anything that was a comment, and then USA Today last week completely redesigning their entire site as a social network is, to me, a, you know, total contradiction in and of itself right there. And it'll be really interesting to watch advertisers interact with really mainstream brands as they start to go through there. I think, you know, and I think the ad, you know, kind of the evangelism and working with advertisers to help them understand these trends is absolutely the right thing to do. I mean, we look at you know, like, again, on the kind of the large advertiser side and big brand side at Yahoo, like with Flickr, for example, we did a completely kind of custom thing for Nikon, where we actually built a photo contest and did a whole site for Nikon. It's really interesting, really cool, and all powered by Flickr photos, all user generated content, and you know, kind of helped them learn what's going on. And I think that it's kind of a two-pronged approach of, you know, doing that, some hand-holding with major brand advertisers and introducing them to this space, as well as, again, sort of the toe-in-the-water approach of, you know, like a Yahoo Publisher Network, where we're actually working directly with the small publishers one-on-one, and, you know, as Larry was saying, like literally looking every day at every single URL that's serving our stuff and figuring out, you know, making sure that it's of appropriate editorial control and everything. And kind of you have to do both. So you have to do the managing and the monitoring and kind of handle them together.
I think there's two things I would say. One is that, you know, as a publisher, you can kind of segregate the content so that you have two different environments for the different types of advertising you'll accept. And I also think that the reason why kind of search and contextual advertising is done so well is because it's all text-based. It's not about a brand trying to present a message or kind of create a position for themselves in the marketplace. It's really been about driving a transaction, whether that's a click or a purchase. And so those types of advertisers that are much more response-driven and about just the bottom line don't really care about the environment that they're in. And so that's really enabled. That's why the search is 50% of the landscape today, because there's a lot of that opportunity out there. But I think now a lot of brand advertisers are seeing that, you know, well, even though it continues to grow, the volume of inventory isn't really there in search, and the CPMs inside of search are escalating. So they're looking for, well, what's my other alternative? And that's why, you know, I think what a number of us are trying to do is help those brand advertisers take advantage of the additional inventory that's now being generated in these kinds of new environments on the web.
I think that's an interesting distinction, because from a performance marketing standpoint, we have a number of advertisers, as long as they're getting a positive ROI, they will have no budget. They will continue to invest in their campaign, just literally continue to throw money as long as their ROI is positive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's not going to work for someone who's afraid of, you know, putting ads on a page that has comments, right? So there's two totally different mind frames there on the advertising side. I think one thing that's really interesting is this discussion. Here we are, all publisher people, and we've totally started talking about, you know, completely from what do the advertisers want. And, you know, it shows the power of that industry, right? I mean, of course, we're the downstream chain there, so it makes sense. But, you know, I think there are some interesting ways to look at how publishers can control their experience too. And I think, you know, like Pat, you guys have really cool tools for the publisher to actually be able to see specifically what creatives are available to them in terms of the type of creative, and then to be able to, you know, say, I don't want that kind of creative, and then watch what impact that would have on your overall percentage of revenue, right?
Yeah.
I think stuff like that's really interesting, and some kind of cool ways that things are changing to give the publisher some control there too.
Okay, questions. I want to go to some questions. And if you could, they asked me to have people stand at the mic for the podcast thing. So if you could go to the mic for the question, that'd be great. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question from a slightly different perspective, in that I'm actually more of a software developer, and I'm building out sites or building out technology where the page, the thing, is not a static content. It's very, very dynamic. So do any of you or either have or know of products that 'll serve up ads based not on a static page, but based on data that I, as the software or as the creator of the content, dynamically the software will tell you. So geographic data or demographic data that I know about my user, and then do any of you have products that will match an ad with that data? So not about the static content of the page, but data that I send you.
So you're basically publishing some form of API from your content?
I have a software product, and right, it's primarily a mobile product, but I will have I'll have a time, a geographic, a whole bunch of other data that I could send you and would like to get inventory of ads that match.
There's a couple ad networks that are specifically kind of delivering ads in time inside of that software environment. And I think if it's an IP-oriented product, then, you know, we certainly would be in a position potentially to deliver ads in that environment, because we know about the user's history, and so we can deliver an ad based on that history and not necessarily based on the fact that they're playing a game, right?
Oh, no, this isn't
but
a game
I'm
at all.
I'm just saying,
but yeah.
I mean, just
yeah,
as an example.
Well, yeah, and as he said, you know, based on IP then allows not only just what the behavior would be, but, yeah, it would be just geo. You know, I mean, I think FeedBurner offers that now, you know, where we allow you to serve, you know, and we allow advertisers to geo-target, you know, and reach specific users. So if it was based, if software-based and it was IP-based, you know, I believe we'd have, you know, we'd be well-positioned to be able to do that, you know.
Yeah, we also have stuff where if you when you make your ad call, you can just put different data in a query string. So if you're when you're making your ad call, you could put in age, gender, geography, all that kind of stuff, and then you know we would use that data to try and show the most appropriate ad.
Specific to IP and geography, geotargeting, Yahoo last year. I mean, again, I'm talking specifically Yahoo. This is not a contextual advertising thing anymore. But in our contextual network, Yahoo last year spent most of the year upgrading our search advertising platform for advertisers and created geotargeting controls as part of that. So we do look at users' location and we'll serve ads specific to a user's location based on advertisers who are trying to target that location.
No. Is that only based on the user's IP, or is that based on data that I send you as the publisher?
Currently, we're not taking data directly from a publisher, no.
Okay, because that wouldn't work for me then.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, the reason specifically wouldn't work is that the user's location and the ad, and where the ad would want to be targeted don't match.
Right.
Because I would actually be having captured data about their intention of where they're going to be, not right. where they are.
Okay, thanks.
It's for Patrick, but you kind of started to answer it in that if Takoda sent you specific behavioral targeting profiles, could you then accept that and use that to better target and say, hey, I have an auto attender who out there among my 10 networks you know, has the best auto intender ad?
Right. We actually, I know we've done some tests with Takoda and our companies are talking as well, but we're also working with other behavioral targeting companies now who essentially use our exchange to get access to more users. So I'm not sure so much that they're putting their data in as much as getting access to users that they then have data on. But I think we are working on things to do stuff both ways where they could essentially, and this isn't Takoda specific, but where a company that has behavioral data could actually sell that data into the exchange where other people could then use it. So, you know, Revenue Science is another behavioral network that I think works similarly to Takoda and how they do business. They could essentially be, you know, exchanging data to make their own advertisers more money if they so chose to have that relationship.
So that's
kind of one of the cool things about an exchange concept is that we allow people who are traditionally competitors to actually gain scale. You know, if one ad network has a publisher that another network's advertiser is going to work better for, then both people can make money off that.
So that kind of leads to the follow-up question, which is if he's sending you very specific information, like you have your own sort of taxonomy of, you know, what these different categories are, and if you work with another partner that is also sending you behavioral, you kind of have to commoditize
It's part of the difficulty of our exchange is standardizing data sets and finding things that will work for everyone. And APIs and a lot of that are things that we're going to be developing over the years.
Yeah,
that's been one of the big challenges for behavioral. I mean, we started in 2001 doing this with individual publishers, and that was the biggest complaint we got from advertisers was there needs to be standard definitions around what these segments mean. And that's why we built our network, because we needed to be able to provide much larger segments that had consistent definitions that an advertiser knew when they were delivering an ad into the USA Today or joespizza.com, that definition that they were buying against was exactly the same.
Has the IAB standardized that stuff yet? So like you know, auto intender, like what does that mean?
No. I think volume-based.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we basically look at the volume of profiles that we're measuring and the segments that we take to the marketplace, and scale is everything at that point.
And okay. You're just U.S. Okay. only now?
We also are in the U.K.
Okay. Thanks.
Hi. My question is more around the actual inventory itself. I run a video site, and what we do is we distribute not just online but to mobile and to on-demand environments. So a lot of what we're doing, we get scale across a number of different environments. So it's been really difficult for us to find how we target advertisers based on these disparate environments, not just disparate sites. And so I was wondering whether there aren't even standards around video yet. You know, we've talked to a number of companies and nobody has an answer of what we can put in our video window. So, what's the roadmap or the timeline for those types of, you know, understanding all these different places that people are, you know, consuming, especially video-based content?
I think media fragmentation in general is a big challenge for us. The IAB has a digital video committee that they're working on trying to create standards. However, that's all about an website environment.
Yeah.
We haven't even broached the topic of the multimedia platforms, VOD, all these things.
Right.
And I think at the end of the day, it comes down to the cost to build creative. Agencies today are building creative for television, and then as the web is kind of a secondary spot, that's slowly changing now that people kind of realize that they have to take a kind of multidimensional approach to how they build out campaigns. And it's not just buying in silos anymore like it used to be. But I think that's the biggest challenge there is the agencies and the clients saying, we're going to build multidimensional campaigns that go cut across mediums, and we are going to have a strategy to do that. And until they can get the holding companies of agencies together to build creative for 7 different locations, that is going to continue to be a big, big challenge for all of us.
As a video service provider, what kinds of advertising are interesting to you? Do you like pre-roll, post-roll? Do you want ads around the video? I think there's so many questions on how video best monetizes right now that everybody's kind of, it's a spaghetti thing right now. People
right.
are just throwing
I've
stuff against the wall.
I've talked to pretty much every player in this space, and nobody's been able to come up. You know, we're you know, a content / distribution shop, and we don't have an ad sales force. So, you know, I'd love to sit down with any one of you guys and just kind of brainstorm about it, because I think that's a huge issue right now. Nobody has any inventory for us, so our content creators. So,
hey guys, thanks for coming out. My questions can, as we know more about our users and specifically target ads to them, is there a point where our users become concerned about their privacy and then we see negative impacts from that?
I mean, I think privacy is always a concern. I know with Right Media and these people as well that there's usually never any personally identifiable information. So when Dakota's mm-hmm. building this user profile about someone, there's nothing associated with that user. So I think a lot of the times it's more of users just not really understanding what's going on, opposed to it really being a privacy worry. I know for me, I mean, and if the question to ask yourself is do you want people tracking all this information about you? Even if they don't know my name, do I want them to know that I'm interested in cars and that I'm interested in this and that? But I know me personally, I would rather see relevantly targeted ads than just ads about stuff that I'm totally not interested in. So I think it's an education effort more than it's a, you know, really that big of a specific privacy concern.
Yeah. Everything that we're doing is completely anonymous, and we don't collect any personally identifiable information, and that's why we actually are working with partners to get access to behavioral data so that there is some transparency to the user. We also, in the fall of last year, launched a consumer advocacy campaign where every user that comes into our network, that we see on our network, we're trying to message to them once every 6 months about their choices, essentially, around privacy and how they can opt out of us putting a cookie on their machine. So, you know, we're trying to take steps to get there. You know, someone like Yahoo has an advantage because they actually do have a direct relationship with the consumer. The rest of us here are kind of a third party or at arm's length from the consumer. So we need to work even harder than they do because they don't have a brand that people trust, right?
And I would say my observation is that the privacy issue also is depends on the type of the user a lot, and it's a generational thing partly. So we have an audience that tends to actually be older and not a particularly web-savvy audience, and they tend to be much more concerned about privacy things than a younger, more web-savvy audience. So there's some variation there, too.
They should stop going to the grocery store.
Yeah, well,
thanks
people
a lot,
don't
guys.
Want to give us our email. You know, they register for the site, and they don't want to give the email because they're going to get spam. It's like, well, you know, we're the least of your problems when it comes to spam, you know.
To Larry's point, they got 30 cents off their milk last week, though, right, with their discount card.
And direct mail is still, what, 30%
yeah, exactly.
Well, kind of like you were saying, FeedBurner from FeedBurner. I would love to have this as a daily job. I have a video blog. Actually, I'm on FeedBurner. And I guess my question, I've gotten 50,000 downloads so far. It's a weekly, like once a week show. And then it's been featured on a lot of sites, most popular, but I can't actually track the statistics.
What's the URL? People blog it.
Richprettygirl.com.
Nice.
It's really silly.
Give her some traffic.
Yes, I get some traffic there. But what I've been wondering is I don't have any advertising or I haven't done anything like that. So, and I know you just told him it was spaghetti with the whole video thing. So,
yeah.
An ad. So I guess what I was wondering is how do you get, like you were saying, the $2 or $3 ads? Like how many users do you need to have? I mean, not users, but people coming to your site.
Right.
You know?
No, and I think you touched on it again of what we're trying to do at FeedBurner is determine, well, how many people did view your video versus how many people came to your site to view your video.
Right.
You know, because we can clearly serve the advertising below your video, maybe, right? You know, but if that video travels elsewhere, right, what do you do with it? You need to pre-roll it. You need to put some monetization with it, you know? So I think you've touched on a real challenge for like a video blogger now is just that. For as much page views and people you're getting actually to your site, it doesn't really compute to how many people are viewing that video or, you know, how many people embedded it on their MySpace and how many people viewed it there, you know? And I think what Cody had touched on was right. I mean, right now there is no best answer for how to really monetize that video content. And what FeedBurner can do is serve the ads around it, you know, and serve the ads in your feed that might only have a description of that video, you know. And so, you know, what we see, though, is a lot of feed readers don't even allow you to serve a video. They'll just strip out that flash unit, you know, or just strip out that embed. So where you'd be getting a lot of your money, maybe some of your subscribers wouldn't even have access to that in the first place. And it's definitely a challenge. I mean, it's right now, yeah, I think your options are somewhat limited in that regard. I think that's unfortunate, you know. I think we're all working on it, right, as we said, of just we'd love to hear what you think. Like, what is the best way to insert advertising in your videos, like, based on the way you publish those videos? You know, what makes the most sense for you? And then how can we, you know, hear that as a mass, really? Yeah. Do people agree with that?
And where's your traffic?
Okay, and maybe you guys could take this offline, because they're going to kick us out of this room momentarily. So, Greg, one more question, Greg, real quick.
Okay, just a quick follow-up
Greg
on the privacy issue.
Greg gets a friend privilege here.
Hi. Thanks. You know, you mentioned the sort of end-user privacy concerns. Given that most of your relationships are directly with publishers, I'm interested in how publishers, particularly down the tail, smaller publishers who are not in, you know, large contract relationships where they're providing data for a fee, you know, how are they thinking about the privacy issue as a sort of intermediary in that chain? Are they aware that the inventory they're passing you may be behaviorally targeted or that data is collected? And are they explicitly on the hook to make their customers aware of that, or is it really all just sort of buried in terms of service, and how are you thinking about it?
Yeah, every inventory provider we work with is required to have a privacy policy on their page, and so for some publishers that's a barrier to entry, but it's an absolute requirement, because in the privacy policy we make sure that they're making it transparent to their consumers of that content where to go to opt out of any cookies that third parties are providing. So that's really the only requirement for a publisher. Have a privacy policy. Make sure you link to the NAI. And if you're doing that, then you can work with an ad network, or at least us. I mean, other ad networks may not care, but we certainly do.
You know, and I think work on educating the publisher, you know, as Jonathan said, you know, work on educating to that generational difference where, you know, us as ad networks, we truly want you to understand your audience. And we want you to hopefully prove to your audience that, you know, I'm trying to learn about you, but it's all for good. You know, it's not that I want to control all these different aspects of what you see every day. I truly just want to allow you to have a better user experience, and me as a publisher to serve up better ads. You know, I want to collect something, but I want to do better for you. You know, I think that's generally how I think of it. You know?
Okay. Great. All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you.